Welcome to the Hay Matters podcast, brought to you by Local Ag and Feed Central. This is your go-to source for all things hay-related in Australia. I'm your host, John Paul Driver. In today's episode, we're joined for a third time by Matt Eckert. Welcome back.
Yeah, g'day, John. Thank you very much for having me. Absolute privilege to be asked.
You know, a story that comes to my mind, you mentioned the fire. Interestingly, I was in, well, it would have been probably still going on just as I was visiting your farm in August of 23. There was a fire going here. They burnt 10,000 acres in about 12 hours, and it's all timber, tree ground.
Yes, yep.
And it burnt right up to one of my hay barns. And the thing that saved it was the neighbor jumping on the cat and pushing fire lines. It stopped. The fire stopped where the neighbor came and jumped on. Well, that it's a leased farm that I have. And the old time farmer that's since retired had a small John Deere cat there with a six-way blade on it. The neighbor jumped on it and started pushing fire lines. And I'm sure as I was at your farm, I was looking at pictures of him coming back with holes burnt in his shirt and the soles of his boots melted. And that sense of community is the thing that comes to my mind as you talk about this adversity.
Yeah, definitely, John. And I remember you being here talking about that, and you were very stressed at the time, weren't you? And you know, people have got your back, haven't they? Like,
I mean, honestly, I put the hay in the barn, and I didn't call the insurance agent before I left for Australia. So it was a full shed of hay, and how many tons it was doesn't really matter because it mattered a lot to me at the time, and it was saved.
That's it. And just one thing here, John, wrote down just to talk about, you know, my biggest grind at the moment in our industry moving forward is just the cost of inputs, probably being number one. That's our single biggest individual cost. That and followed by the cost of machinery, John. I just cannot fathom the cost of machinery now. It's, you know, I remember when we started deep ripping and we were, you know, just young blokes, just full throttle, and we sat down and worked out our numbers and we bought a brand new quad track to do it, and it was 460,000, and sort of do your numbers and you think, well, if I allow sort of, you know, 650,000 to for the new one by the time I've worn this out, you know, that'll be plenty. And you wear it out, we've just put nearly 10,000 hours on it, and you wear it and you get to the point and you think about trading it up and you're like, you need $1 million, John. And you think, Jesus, mate, like,
I wasn't planning for this.
I was not budgeting this. Like, I added on a few hundred extra thousand and thought that'll be plenty. And so I genuinely say, like, the cost of soil amelioration is double what we ever thought it was going to be. Mm. But then in saying that, you know, me and Tim will often say it, yes, it's costly, but the cost of doing nothing is greater. So we've just got to manage it to fit in with what we can afford to do at the times. And, you know, just slow and steady sort of is going to get there in the end. But just the cost of that is just double what we even budgeted. And I just don't even know where the money went, John. Like, just, you know, blows your mind. And when we're doing, you talk about machinery and stuff and how you run your machinery and big sensor, a lot of farms out there, and you know, you'd put a couple thousand, 2,000, 3,000 hours on a machine, and it's sort of like you're made feel by your dealers that it's time to trade them up and stuff. And we just can't afford to do that, John. So that hence why we've got the workshop in which we've got, we do all our own maintenance and everything, and we made the thing now that we'll trade our machinery up when it's not doing what it needs to do. And we're buying new, we purchase new, but we run it for a long time. Mm-hmm. And we put it, like our quad track's nearly 10,000 hours. Another one of our big Arctics is nearly 10,000 hours. Just done a full overhaul on that, had all the diffs out, everything, rebuilt everything on that. Mm-hmm. You know, our fence are all, you know, I think the youngest one's 6,000 hours, up to 12,000 hours sort of thing. But yeah, it just blows my mind how our machinery has just got so expensive, but yet it seems to just not be lasting as long. And we get the hours on them quick, and we just I don't know where it's going to stop, John. We've got to see a level in point at some point. We can't, you know, you can't keep paying that type of money for machines not to do things like soil amelioration and stuff. I think you just got to learn to fix it yourself and keep that old
and the parts too, right? The parts are a nightmare.
Parts will be the death of me, John.
Just getting the right ones.
Just getting the right ones, and Christ!
I have my parts numbers right here in front of me that I went to the. I gotta buy some John Deere parts, and I went to JDPC, the John Deere parts catalog, and they have all the parts diagrams, and I look at them, and I go and look for the serial number breaks. And I go and double check the serial number, and I think that I have the right part. And then I call the parts guy, and I ask for the good one. And I tell him the serial number, and he looks up. And if we both agree, then I'll order the parts. But if we're not on the exact same page on every single thing, nope, we'll try this another day. We're going to come back to this. Because the time it takes to do that properly is horrendous.
It's a very big challenge. You know, I say that, you know, you've got mechanics in the workshop and stuff. I just sometimes just jump in the ute and drive to Adelaide and have a look at what you need to get. Sometimes it just gets beyond you, and you think you get it right, and then it turns up and it's infuriating. But yeah, it's a big thing. Machinery costs is just, it's just out of control, and our dealers are just not getting any cheaper to use. You can't afford to use them anymore, really. You really got to be doing your own servicing and maintenance as much as you can. It just, the margins are just tightening up so much that that's the only way I can sort of keep the wheels turning, really, especially if you want to do a lot of work. So on things like soil amelioration that aren't necessarily a high cash flow instant return result, they're a long game.
I mean, you're hoping to get your money back on that over the course of 20 years.
Yeah, definitely.
Those are the type of time horizons that you're thinking about.
Yes, it is. And the tractors just aren't doing 20 years worth of work. That's the problem. But yeah, and you know, another one of mine and Tim's big things is efficiency. Like, we focus on efficiency every day, John. It's a big part of what we do. But don't get too deep in efficiency thinking you need the biggest and the best for efficiency to be efficient. Efficiency's balancing up and making the process, to make the process as efficient as you can. It's about having the right capacity machines for that job. And you know, with machinery purchasing, you have to be so careful that everything you purchase, there's not a reaction. Well, every action has a reaction, and you think, you know, I'll buy a bigger header, and then you can't physically move the grain it reaps. Or you'll buy a bigger seeder, and then your sprayer physically can't spray the hectares ahead of it. So looking at that efficiency across the entire machinery plan is very important, you know.
Balancing. I call that balancing the equipment complement.
It is. And, I mean, we run John Deere headers. They're not the biggest capacity. Because we run our own trucks and cart our own grain, there's a limiting factor on the actual physical grain we can move. So we don't necessarily look at the header that reaps the most grain per hour. We look at the header that will reap the most grain, the most hours in a day with the minimal breakdowns, most reliability. And that's why we run, say, John Deere headers. And we could get too big, you know, big twin roding ewons or even X9 John Deere's, but you physically can't move the grain, then you create another bottleneck, you create inefficiencies. So trying to balance all of that machinery up. I mean, I remember we'll talk about the hay side of things because, you know, that's Feed Central's game. I remember, you know, we
and so many processes that have
huge amount of processes
that are dependent upon one another and dependent upon whether there's humidity or rain.
You know, like hay side of things, we were running back in the day when we bought our first big square baler. We stepped up, we went out and we moved into a D1210 New Holland baler, and we thrashed that out. And I can't even remember how many thousands of bales we did with it, but she was thrashed by the time we were done with it. And then we bought a brand new 2270 and, oh, fantastic. We gone to this high density baler, you know, and you talk about efficiencies. Well, then we couldn't rake it quick enough.
Oh, yeah.
We couldn't stack it quick enough.
Yeah.
We couldn't lift the bales. You know, we went from, you know, doing 420 kilo bales to 650 kilo bales.
Yeah, and lifting three of those is a completely different game.
Yeah, so we had to step up there. So we stepped up our loaders, our shed capacities and things like that. And then we went on the Aphia trip and we come back we just got to have a crone. You just got to have an 8-stringer crone for the outcome that we wanted to achieve. It's the only machine to run. And so we went with the 8-stringer crone, bang, couldn't lift the bales again, John, next level. You know, and we went from stacking them 6 high to stacking them 9 high. We went from moving 4 bales at once to 5 bales at once. We went from wheeled rakes to rotary rakes. And now we've got the entire system working now. And, you know, go out now and we rake bale. We have a mill stack stacker coming behind.
Oh.
And then we have a couple of trucks running the hay back to the sheds. And it's quite incredible when you line up the efficiency levels across the entire enterprise. It's amazing to watch. It's, you know, like the baler will go out, it'll be baling. By the next morning, say you bale 500 or 600 bales, by the next morning they're in the shed stacked. It's incredible to watch. It's an unreal process when you get that efficiency across the entire system working and you get the right guys on the jobs. Just amazing what you can achieve. But like I say, no point having 4 balers or, you know.
If you don't have the trucks for it or the rakes for it, if you have any bottleneck in that process, you can spend all the money in the world on a baler, but if you don't have the rakes or the trucks, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't work. It's an entire process, and it's all got to be calculated to work. And we finally got there over the last sort of 10 years where our systems work. And then, you know, another one I just wrote down here, John, like a bit, you know, employees and stuff. Like, our business is built on employees and people. It's built on family and then our employees, our team members, I guess you would say. And we're just very fortunate to have such a great team of guys. We're given them more and more responsibilities sort of every sort of season, I guess. You know, we've always had good people and I just love employing people and helping them grow their personal lives too. And, you know, like, you got to treat every one of your team members individually, if you know what I mean. Like, mm-hmm. Everyone is different. Everyone has different priorities in life. You know, I've got one lad that works here at the moment. He's got triplet kids.
Huh.
So his life is just full on, mate. Like,
oh.
And I don't know how he juggles it. He's an absolute machine, you know. He comes to work and works his, you know, 50-odd hours a week, and his partner works in Murray Bridge and she'd be working 40-odd hours a week, and yet they juggle this
triplets.
Family life and these triplets. It's unreal to watch. I've got one child and I struggle with balancing that, John.
How old is your child?
So mine's just about to turn 2. So,
okay.
So yeah, got a little daughter. Yeah, she's turning into, I guess, what do they call it, the terrible twos or something, isn't it?
My son Kieran just hit 10 months.
Yeah, right. Oh, well, congratulations on that. Yeah. So very challenging times, very rewarding.
Yes.
I just marvel at Daniel. I just can't believe how he does it with triplets. It must be full on.
Earlier, you were talking about adversity makes you think differently. And immediately, now having a little one, there's this concept that immediately after becoming a parent, your brain works differently. And it's because you have to rise to the occasion and you just figure out what you have to do. And you just make it work. And it doesn't matter how many times you're up in the middle of the night with a bottle or changing diapers, just all of those things, right, that come with being a parent and all of the regular life that comes along with it. And the adversity that you're experiencing with the drought, it's almost that same type of situation where You just figure it out because you don't have any other option.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and it's tough to sometimes figure it out, isn't it?
Huh.
And it can be challenging.
And you still do the wrong things.
Make mistakes all the time. I mean, I'm far from perfect. I'm in that process at the moment where I'm really trying to juggle that family life at the moment as well as work. But like I say, very lucky to have the team of guys that we have here. It makes mine and Tim's life so much easier. But still, you know, I'm very fortunate to have the most amazing wife. Like she's a nurse, a clinical nurse at Murray Bridge. And she's, you know, being a nurse, you're pretty robust and sort of understand what you're doing a bit. And thank God I got her, John, because if Rosie had to rely on me looking after her, we'd be in trouble, I think.
I think I could do it, but I wouldn't want to have to.
That's exactly what I'm sort of saying. I'd manage, but, you know, just very lucky to have Megan by my side doing that. And I try my best to not take my problems home, especially during the drought. Like, I really do try my best, but sometimes they do just come out and you just, you know, Dad's struggled with the dryer probably more than me and Tim, just from that livestock side of things. And that always brings tension and stress. And I try not to take it home, John, but sometimes it just follows me home. And it's not what I try to do, but I'm trying very hard to get better at that and not necessarily take that home to my wife and child.
It is part of the support network, though.
It is, but I just, you know, she's there and stuff, but, you know, she's got her own things going on. We're pregnant at the moment again with our second now.
Congratulations.
So thank you. We're just at 20 weeks now. So she's doing a tremendous effort, really. And, like, you know, I've been away a bit in the trucks lately, just trying to
make it work.
Make up a bit of lost ground, I guess. And she's handled that very well. So very fortunate to have her, and I admire what she does. She's a nurse, and, you know, she spends her life saving people's lives and always puts other people's welfare before her own. That's probably the problem. But I remember, John, we're getting sidetracked here, but, you know, you talk about things going wrong and never really fully understood what Megan maybe did as a job until, like, back in 2021 when we started building the workshop. We had one of the columns, 9 meter, 610 UB, universal beam columns they are, and it's a pretty hefty sort of post, I guess, and we brought a load of them home from Horsham. We had them on the truck, and we were down there just by the Weybridge, you know, where you drive in there, right on the bloody road there, and we're unloading them, and my brother let go a ratchet strap, and one of the columns come tumbling off the top of the truck and landed on the back of my shoulders and broke my back, broke 6 vertebrae in my back, and, yeah, was not good at all. And I was very lucky to survive that. And just an inch different, John, would have taken my head off. And, you know, my brother and one of our guys was there at the time, and, you know, you ring the ambulance and they will come out, and, you know, my wife's a nurse and she's at Murray Bridge, and you sort of think, Jesus, you know, like, things aren't going well. You sort of can't feel your feet. You wonder whether you're going to walk again. And anyway, I was very lucky. And it wasn't until I was getting dragged through the doors of the Royal Adelaide Hospital, and we getting wheeled in there. Megan's coming in behind me. She's walking in, and it's like you walking into your workplace. And she's like, "How you going, mate? How you going? How you going?" She's saying g'day to everyone. She knows everybody. Everyone knows her. And it's then you realise, you know, what she does as a job and how important what she does is. Mm. And very lucky to have her. And it was a scary day, so more so for her than probably myself. But don't wish that on anyone. But I'm very lucky I got out of a bad situation by the skin of my teeth. And, you know, I suffer with my back now a lot from it. But shit, mate, I'm here walking, and it's just so close it wasn't funny.
Just the other day, a friend of mine dropped a hitch on a cul-de-packer on his left foot and broke all of his toes.
Ugh.
Safety on the farm. I nearly cut my left thumb off of my own doing. And it's just a moment. It only takes a moment.
It does. And I was just going through some photos with mum and dad there. And I said to dad, I said, Jesus, mate, like, we're pretty loose back in the day. And it's because of things like that have happened that have made us really look at our systems, I guess. And we just don't do that sort of stuff anymore, John. You know, I mean, it's just looking at a photo of dad building the work of the building the shearing shed back in, would have been the early 1990s, and I had this John Deere loader. It'd be about a, it was a JD 500 loader, power shift with a 720 loader on it, yellow one, and industrial loader.
Yeah.
They had bolted a 30-foot windmill tower to the bucket, and then they'd lift the trusses up on the end of this windmill tower.
Yeah.
And then they'd lift them right up, get them into position, and then they'd climb up the windmill tower to get up and unhook the chain, and you just think, oh, my God, mate, like, just unbelievable. And they're doing this under the power lines, and you're thinking, Jesus Christ. Yeah, it's just recipe for disaster, you know. And then they had their scaffolding. They had this old ACCO C1800 truck, and they put the stock crate on it, and they tip the hoist up and stand on the top deck of the crate, tip her right up in the air, and that's how they used it, was getting up to get the bolts in and stuff like that. And just like, imagine that, John, like lifting it too high and just crushing the bloke in the top of it or something like that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Got a bloody 50-ton hydraulic hoist lifting you up, mate. Like,
oh, yeah.
But they got it done. They were, you know, my dad and my papa, they were innovative people. They built all their own sheds and, you know, things like that. And it got us to where we are today, but certainly is why we have a lot of other systems implemented now, you know, with safety on the farm and just making sure we sort of manage those issues if we can. We just don't do that silly stuff anymore. I can't believe we ever did it, John. Looking through those photos thinking, oh my God. Oh my God. Yeah. But anyway.
Oh, except you have to, at some point, you have to make those decisions as to what's to be done and what's not going to be done. And sometimes I wonder, I mean, I take farm safety way more carefully and way more seriously than I ever have. But you just find yourself in those spots sometimes where you're going, I shouldn't be doing this. Ah, this is dumb. I hope I survive.
Yeah, I understand that feeling, and I know it very well. But, you know, you have a few things go wrong and you sort of think, yeah, you know, yeah. You got kids at home now and all my guys have kids at home. And
yep.
You just... Nah, you just can't do it. You just got to find the right way to do it and do it safely.
We're just putting our baler back together, and we noticed a crack on the back of the plunger. Nothing really major, just needed to grind it out and weld it up a little bit. And my hired man was doing that today, and the exact words that came out of my mouth, you goddamn better well put the brake on the flywheel. Not pulling you out of that machine squished.
It's a big thing, isn't it? When that flywheel starts turning, so you're obviously up nothing somewhere by the knives there.
Nothing you can do to... Well, it was on the backside of the plunger.
Yes, very dangerous spot to be. You get in there and you hang your legs down, don't you? Yep. Or something like that. You'll lose them. And that you won't stop that flywheel.
No.
So, no, it's... You often think that when I'm in the baler chamber there, you know, and you're cleaning out and you sort of think, shit, yeah, I might just get out and go and put that brake on, mate.
Yeah,
because the chrome baler, I don't know what the flywheel weighs in the chrome baler, but once that starts turning, well, John, it ain't going to stop.
It's got to be half a ton or more, isn't it?
Oh, I think it's 500 or 600 kilos. It'd take your fingers off, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You just don't stop it. So and the gear ratio that it's geared down, it'll crunch you.
Well, so. The older I get, the more particular I get. And we've talked about employees.
When you get to the scalability about what we do now, you got to really sit down and go, I can't do it all. I have to accept the job that they do and be happy with the job they do. And one of the biggest ways to let your guys grow is remove yourself. Just go and do something else, mate. I just jump in a truck and disappear, and I come home and things are done. They seem to be so much more productive without me there. So you just slowly start to remove yourself. You know, you let them, let them have a day on the cedar, and then you start letting them start it in the morning themselves. And over time, all of a sudden, you're just turning up there. Like Tim just turns up at the cedar at 6 o'clock at night, jumps on it, drives it till midnight, turns it off, goes home again. And, you know, you just, it's a challenging thing. It really is. And
one of my favorite parts is when you find something, a task where your employee is obviously better than you. I mean, this is one of the reasons that you hire people. In the business world,
yes.
the CEO of the bank is not the financial modeler, right?
No.
He wants to hire a really good financial modeler. I mean,
Tim's always said that we need to employ smarter people than us.
Oh, yeah. Well, this series has been absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for all of your thoughts and your perspective on drought and family. It's all been wonderful.
Thank you, John. And yeah, once again, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be involved. And yeah, I wish you all the best for your season over there too.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This podcast is proudly presented by Feed Central and Local Ag. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes.